Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and for about a year and a half now, I've been doing this show called Tell the Truth Faster, dealing with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective, which means focusing not just on therapy as it addresses the mind and psychology, but finding a balance between body-mind connection and spirituality also. The essence of this being that, in my opinion, one needs to deal with the whole being and to discard the concept that we have a higher power, a sense of spirit, whatever energy you want, whatever word you want to use to call that energy is fine with me. But to me, it has to be part of the entire healing process. So, as I said, I've been doing the show for about a year and a half, but this is only my second show at my new home here at KXAM, and I'm very glad to be here. And just thank the station tremendously for the welcome I've gotten, and hopefully some new listeners out there. I remind you that this is a live call-in show, that I am live on the air right now. And if you're local in the Phoenix area, the number to call in on, if you have questions, comments, reactions to what I'm talking about, or just some personal issues you want to discuss and maybe get some guidance on, the local Phoenix number is 874-1311. That's 480-874-1311. But you can also, if you're listening over the Internet, at kxam.com, the toll-free line is 1-888-437-7660. That's 1-888-437-7660. And I will try and remember to remind you of those numbers as the show continues. And I guess that's a good opening. I will try to remember. If any of you were listening last week, you knew that I kind of reversed the times and thought I had more time than I did, thought the time in L.A. was now 8 o'clock, and thought I had a couple of hours before going on the air until I got a call from my studio engineer, Candace, telling me, well, are you calling in? And it was only like 5 more minutes because I kept thinking the show was on later, and actually the time difference means it's earlier. Now, this is a mistake anybody can make. And I had even called a colleague in Phoenix to confirm which way the time difference is going. And she even confirmed it. But it's also part of a pattern in my own life. And tonight's topic is just that, attention deficit disorder in adults. Is it an excuse or a reality? The issue tends to be quite controversial. There was an article in the LA Times recently in the health section just this week, actually, about a new medication for it called Strattera, and particularly for adults. And it covered the whole pros and cons of all this. Now, I said I'm pretty holistic and metaphysical in my approach in life as well as professionally. And we're going to be talking a lot tonight about, well, maybe not a lot, but at least significantly enough about medications. Things like Ritalin and Adderall and Dexedrine and all these stimulants that gets people's backs up, whether they're parents with kids with ADD or ADHD, and we're going to talk about the difference in a minute, or whether it's about adults. Now, what is ADD? ADD is a disability legally, according to the federal government and the Disabilities Act, but it's also a disorder, attention deficit disorder, which means that the prefrontal cortex of the brain with people with ADD have some kind of imbalance going on there. That's the part of the brain that deals with focus, concentration, organization, things like that. So I'm 53 years old, And I spent my whole life achieving things and dealing with the chaos of struggling to achieve what I have achieved. I mean, I have a master's degree. I've had a successful practice in L.A. I had that in South Florida before I moved here. But it was always a struggle. And at age 45, just almost 8 years ago, a therapist that I was seeing actually identified this. And it was like the light bulb finally went on. It made such sense when I looked at my own patterns, my own history, the diagnosis criteria, and it was me. It had been me since childhood. The difference between my own experience and what you often see in kids that are diagnosed with ADHD is I didn't have the H. I didn't have the hyperactivity component. And so as a kid, you know, people just thought I was sometimes a little daydreamy. But I really had to work so hard at paying attention, focusing, reading textbooks, doing all that sort of stuff. And it was a struggle. It was a very big struggle. But nobody knew because I was a good kid. I wasn't getting into trouble. I was a sweet kid that most adults really liked me. Most of my teachers really liked me. But it was a struggle. That part of my brain that needed to work properly to get me to focus and stay focused, to get me to follow through on things, was not working properly. And so at age 45, all of a sudden, the pieces come together. Now, I have, in my lifetime, been in therapy with many different therapists, with many different approaches. I've done all sorts of holistic and metaphysical work, from Reiki to rebirthing to reflexology and to acupuncture, all sorts of workshops, Rolfing, Heller work, you name it, I've done it. And all of it has helped, and all of it has helped me get clarity on issues and do my forgiveness and do a lot of healing about a lot of things in my life. But one of the things that was most difficult was, in the course of all that, it was near impossible, it seemed to me, to forgive myself for feeling like such a fraud, because out in public people thought I was handling everything so well, but inside I felt like I was going to be found out any minute, that, you know, the promises that I make, that I had to come up with excuses that I didn't follow through on them, or even simple things like filling out invoices for clients for insurance purposes and stuff, something that would literally take me 3 minutes to do may take a couple of weeks for a client to get the material from me, which even frustrated my clients and certainly is not a very professional thing to do. It helped me understand why I was doing that. So when I was sitting with this therapist, and he said to me, after only about 3 or 4 sessions, he said, "Have you ever considered the fact that the missing piece to your puzzle is attention deficit disorder?" And my response to him was, in adults? You know, I thought that was just these kids bouncing off the walls in elementary school and junior high school. And he said, well, a lot of them don't have the hyperactive component. A lot of them may have that, but still learn how to adapt to situations and learn how to survive through life. And so the symptoms sometimes become masked to the outside eye. So he read off the criteria, and my mouth dropped. And I knew that what we were talking about had everything to do with me. So I said to Roy Hedrick, was his name then, you know, what do I do? He said, well, if you're willing to go the medication route, and like I said, I'd spent years doing all the other things, so to me, it seemed like the only thing I hadn't tried. He said, then we start with a low dose of Ritalin and go from there. So I got a prescription from a physician, and I remember the day in my kitchen in my apartment, 5 milligrams of Ritalin. Holding it in my hand, saying a prayer, knowing that I was on the right track for the first time ever in terms of getting to the root of certain issues and saying, if this is meant to work, then please let it work. Now, stimulants are what is used because what they do is stimulate that part of the brain to find more balance in the chemistry there, to produce whatever it is they're supposed to be producing. It's not meant to speed an individual up, so to speak. It's meant to stimulate the prefrontal cortex of the brain to function the way it's supposed to function. So for those of you who are already reacting to the word Ritalin and stimulants and all this other stuff, we're going to take a break, and feel free to call in with questions when we come back. But we're going to take a short break here and continue with this story and this discussion on ADD when we come back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles with a private practice as well as involved with a lot of other things. And tonight we're talking about attention deficit disorder in adults. If you have some comments or questions or thoughts of your own about this or your own experience with this diagnosis, if you're in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-874-1311. 480-874-1311. Toll-free number from outside the Phoenix area, anywhere in the country, 1-888-437-7660. 437-7660. So where I left you before the break was standing in my kitchen holding a small tablet of 5 milligrams of Ritalin. And I took it. Now, because these stimulants actually get into the bloodstream pretty quickly, they also have only about a 3-4 hour blood life, which means that they leave the bloodstream at that point. And the dose that one takes for this is not, I mean, my mom and everyone else was saying, oh, you're going to become addicted to this stuff. I'll get into that a little bit later, but the doses that you take for a therapeutic treatment for ADD in terms of the stimulants is a minor amount compared to what speed freaks and, you know, crystal addicts and stuff will take in terms of the addictive process. So I took the 5 milligrams and stood there, and within about 15 minutes, I started feeling something I've only ever felt in things like doing rebirthing, the breath work that I had been doing for years and still do. I used to really relate to Pigpen, the character in Peanuts, the comic strip, with that dust cloud around her head or his head. It's kind of an androgynous character. And all of a sudden, it felt like this warm breeze came along and just blew that dust cloud from around my head. And for the first time, I felt grounded and present and focused in the world. And this is just 5 milligrams, which is a low dose. You know, most adults take anywhere from 10 to 20 milligrams a dose. And, you know, over the years, I found that 20 milligrams seems to be my optimum dose. So all of a sudden, the piles of papers all over my apartment that have been there my whole life, covering my desk, dining room table, the sense of disorganization, it felt like all of a sudden, and within the next couple of weeks, I found myself actually cleaning a lot of this stuff up, throwing things away that, you know, needed to get tossed, putting into filing cabinets. The sense of focus was amazing, and it wasn't like a speediness. The irony of it is it actually calmed me down. And a lot of people with ADD who take these meds, a lot of people report something similar. There's a different level of energy, but it's a calmer, more consistent energy that allows us to focus, follow through, communicate in a healthier way instead of things slipping out of our mouths that we had no control from going from a thought to a word. It was just an amazing experience. So basically that's my story. And then because of that, I started realizing that there were many clients over the years that I totally missed this diagnosis with. And I tend to be a therapist here in LA that will pick up on it when others may not. And that's not to say they're not good therapists. It's just that I have a personal experience where it's almost like, you know, people who are gay or lesbian say there's this thing called gaydar where they can kind of tell. I could walk into a room often, and there could be 20 people in that room, and I could feel a connection with the one person in that room that may have ADD, whether they know it or not. There is, you know, I mean, I know that's an extreme statement, and I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it happens often enough for me to know that there is a connection, a knowingness, an energy. So things really started changing in my relationships, professionally. One thing that I can tell you about people with ADD is we very often are the visionaries of the world, partly because we have developed the tools to think outside the box, because the box for most people meant learning by reading the textbook, learning by getting through this chapter, knowing how to do the research in school to get what you needed, you know, to really be able to stay focused on it. But those of us with ADD tend to be pretty creative, intuitive, visionary type of people, and often very intelligent, but haven't been able to channel any of that. So one of the frustrations that many of us feel is we have all these great ideas and no follow-through. Though there are a lot of people with ADD that are extremely successful, partly it may be because they chose occupations where it's not a 9-to-5 thing, where there's something unique every day, something newly stimulating. Even if someone is able to become a doctor, they tend to be emergency room doctors, you know, where there's something new grabbing them at every moment. A lot of people in the arts, you know, I live in Hollywood, literally live in Hollywood, and, you know, it's not unusual to see, you know, temperamental and odd behaviors by people who are artists, actors, writers, you know, where they have these spurts of brilliance and yet a great deal of frustration because they don't have the sense of confidence within themselves because it was never programmed that way. So we become these visionaries. You know, I'm constantly getting great ideas for businesses or solutions to things, and, you know, I finally learned to at least start taking notes on some of them. And in the last 8 years or so, I've actually been able to start following through because I learned that what I needed to do was be honest. Remember, tell the truth faster? I learned that one of the most important things that I could do, number one, is to be public about this thing, to be upfront when I'm making new friends or new relationships or even with the old ones, to say, you know what, this is something that you may notice. You may see my eyes wandering. It may be the meds are wearing off, or, you know, it's just old habits there. But I am listening, even if my eyes are scanning a restaurant or something. So I've learned to sit facing the wall in a restaurant so I can stay more focused with whoever I'm having dinner with. But it's also about knowing how to ask for help, realizing there's no shame. And it was such a relief to know that I had this, and now I understood new boundaries that I could set, new parameters in terms of what I needed to get done and what the kind of help I needed to do it. I didn't have to pretend like I could do it all myself for fear that people would find out that I really couldn't. That was a heavy weight. So, you know, I have a friend right now who's helping me get on paper about 4 different pilot ideas that are incredible. Everybody that's heard them say that, but they've been bouncing literally around my head for some of them for 10 years. Now something's happening with them, and I hope to sell them and see them actually on the screen. So that's basically my story. I want to talk also is how do you know if you have it? And what's all this commotion about it's overdiagnosed, and it's an excuse for people not to have to take responsibility for their behaviors, you know, all that sort of stuff. And some of it's legitimate. There are kids on Ritalin today who shouldn't be. There are kids where it was a quick fix mom or dad or the school was looking for, rather than dealing with some different type of legitimate behavior problems or emotional problems that a child may have. Hyperactivity is not always about ADD. But to throw the baby out with the bathwater is also unfair to those that legitimately are diagnosed with this. Many times I've had clients where I've picked up on it, adult clients in their 30s or 40s, and I picked up on it, and we started talking about it, and I said, you know, was this ever discussed when you were a kid? And he or she may say, well, actually, I think I was diagnosed with this because I remember a certain point when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I was put on some medication, and it may have been Ritalin. And I said, well, what did you notice? And almost inevitably, they will say, my grades got better. I was having a better time with friends and having an easier time socially and felt good about what I was able to do. And I said, well, what happened? And often the story goes that around age 12 or 13 or 14, mom or dad started worrying about adolescents and making an addict out of their kids and feeling guilty or ashamed that somehow they gave birth to a defective child or whatever issues mom or dad may have had. But very often it was out of good intentions and fear that if these kids are on a stimulant, they'll become, you know, cokeheads or something in adolescence. So what happens is they decided to remove the kids from the meds. They had a horrible adolescence, which they automatically assumed was just adolescence. The kids usually started doing drugs because they were trying to self-medicate again and get back to that feeling. And very often the drug of choice was either pot to numb and quiet the busy mind and all this internal energy, or they found their own stimulants, whether it was coke or today the crystal problem we have, you know, so rampant, you know, everywhere. Some of this is self-medicating behavior. And if they had left that teenager on the medications, they probably would have had a much happier adolescence than the family would have also. So these adults in their 30s or 40s, having remembered all this and talked to mom or dad if they were still alive, get back on the medication, and it's like a reawakening of that period in elementary or junior high school where things were working again. The key here is, I know I'm talking a lot about meds, but I'm going to talk about the other aspect after this short break, the fact that there's therapy and behavioral work that needs to be done along with this. It's not just popping a pill to make the change. So, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Tell the Truth Faster. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight my topic is Attention Deficit Disorder in Adults, an Excuse or a Reality? And if you are inclined to call in and participate in the topic, if you have your own stories about this to discuss or some challenges you want to make to it, which I know there are plenty of people out there that do, or you have some other issues you want to talk about, the local number in Phoenix is 480-874-1311, 480-874-1311. And if you're outside the Phoenix area, anywhere in the country, if you're listening on the Internet, it's 1-888-437-7660. So, before the break, I think I was talking about the cynics, you know, like this is a fad diagnosis. Well, this diagnosis has been around for a long time. You know, back in the early 1900s, these kids were called incorrigible. But the reality of it is ADD is not something that has an onset in adulthood. Any adult that's exhibiting the symptoms or criteria that I'm about to go through has to be able to trace it back to childhood. If it's something that's onset in adulthood, it may be a brain injury from hitting one's head. It could be drug abuse. It could be a number of other things or diagnoses. But ADD is not something that all of a sudden shows up in adulthood, even though sometimes and often it may first, like with me, first get diagnosed in adulthood. So it's something that is diagnosed in all socioeconomic stratas, all races, religions. It's certainly an equal opportunity disability. And, you know, maybe it's being diagnosed more now because people are more aware of it. Maybe because it, who knows why it's being diagnosed more, but it's just something that has come under the gun. So there are a lot of cynics out there that say it's the quick answer for people who are struggling with things. And there are people who claim that it's really a fabrication of the drug companies who are making billions of dollars off these stimulants, which they are making billions of dollars off these stimulants, and but it's certainly not a fabrication of the drug companies. You know, they're just reaping some of the financial benefits of the reality of ADD or ADHD. So what is it? How do you know if you have it? Well, statistics seem to estimate that 6 to 8% of the general population, according to the National Attention Deficit Disorder Association, say the 6 to 8% of the general population probably have this. Now, there are some people who may go as high as 10%. I think that's high. But 6 to 8% sounds realistic. And the other thing is, as I'm going through some of the criteria or diagnosis, everyone, and I mean everyone, can relate to these diagnostic criteria. Somebody with ADD, though, puts these criteria together in a way that it's been chronic and invasive in their lives in a major way for all their life. Now, some as adults, you know, we tend to mask or accommodate certain symptoms. High achievers tend to be able to surround themselves with assistants and support staffs and things like that. So, you know, again, they're the visionaries. They come up with the ideas, and they have the detailed people around them. You look at a lot of, you know, major players in this world throughout history, and a lot of them, not a lot of them, but a certain number of them have ADD, diagnosed or undiagnosed, but they somehow had, they found the people that were able to hold the same vision and feel motivated by them and able to put the pieces of the puzzle together to carry out and create corporations and develop new products and do all the creative work. So again, one of the criteria is chronic procrastination or trouble getting started. I agree. All of us procrastinate at one time or another. All of us may do it semi-regularly. You know, there may be a lot of reasons for the procrastination, fear of failure, fear of a lot of different things, or, you know, just being beaten down as a kid because of abuse and afraid to step out and do things. There could be a lot of reasons for it. But someone with ADD, the procrastination is chronic. Even as a kid, I was putting off assignments to the last minute, literally. I mean, if you think of how many all-nighters I pulled in college, yeah, students in college pull all-nighters all the time. But it wasn't until my senior year that I actually completed a paper that was due and completed it 2 weeks before it was due. Almost every paper I ever did, almost every assignment I ever was given tests to study for, it was totally even begun sometimes a day before it was due. And that's the chronic aspect of this. There's a book that I often, usually I keep copies of it here in my office, so if I have someone that we're considering this as a diagnosis, I usually give them a copy of it because they'll usually put off going out to buy it. It's called Driven to Distraction, Recognizing and Coping with a attention deficit disorder from childhood through adulthood. And it's written by two medical doctors named Edward Hallowell and John Rady, both of which my understanding is are adults diagnosed with ADD. So there's someone else that has a lot of good information, Dr. Daniel Amen, and there's a website called One ADD Place. That's O-N-E-A-D-D-P-L-A-C-E, oneaddplace.com. And on that website, there's also a general adult ADD symptom checklist that Dr. Amen put together in 1995 that you can print out and do, you know, take a look at this and take it to your therapist. Now, as a marriage and family therapist, technically I'm not here to diagnose, although after certain years of experience with things, I know when I need to refer someone to a psychiatrist for a formal diagnosis. And the couple of psychiatrists I work with here in LA have enough confidence in what they've seen in me at this point that when I'm sending someone to them, they're taking me seriously when I'm saying, check this out, see if there's anything else going on other than the ADD or instead of, but they certainly are showing some classic stuff here. The driven to distraction breaks it down to actually 20 items that Hallowell and Rady go through, and I'm reading this off page 73 of Driven to Distraction. And they say a chronic disturbance in which at least 15 of the following are present, 15 of the 20 at least. And to me that means if I'm doing this checklist with a client or with a friend, and 15 or more show up, it doesn't mean they have ADD. I then say, read this book. Do some research on the internet. Find out more about it, because the next step after doing this cursory assessment is to educate oneself. If you still see yourself strongly in these things, then the next step is see a psychiatrist for a formal diagnosis. So, number one, a sense of underachievement, of not meeting one's goals, regardless of how much one has actually accomplished. It's kind of like that feeling, I just can't get my act together, and that's a very common refrain for many of us with ADD. Number two, as I said before, difficulty getting organized. The supposed little things may mount up to create huge obstacles. You know, so, you know, with ADD, sometimes we're constantly making lists but still can't check things off. But lists actually are a good way to organize an ADD mind and to actually coach, and that's a big part of this. As I was saying before the last break, the medication isn't a cure for ADD. It's part of a treatment. And there are holistic approaches that people are using with biofeedback and other things that some people opt for. I had done all that stuff. I decided the one thing I hadn't tried was the medication. But I support my clients who don't want to go medication and to have them explore other alternatives. So the difficulty getting organized, if somebody is diagnosed with this and assuming that they do take the meds, therapy and coaching is a major component to treating ADD. I'm going to say that again. Therapy and coaching are major components, along with complementing with the medication. It's essential. Unfortunately, we live in a society where we're taught if we just pop a pill, it solves a problem. It's what, you know, part of the problem with most alcoholics and addicts, or, you know, whatever the behaviors are, chemical, but it's also part of the problem with since the 1950s, you know, you've got a pain in our head. Instead of maybe taking a look at why we're tense or where that pain's coming from and what other messages it may be sending us, we quickly pop the aspirin just to take care of the pain without really dealing with the root cause very often. So, again, coaching and therapy. Why the therapy? Partly because you have a lifetime, I know I did, a lifetime of frustration, anger, embarrassment, sense of failure, hopelessness. There's a lot that therapy can help in working with that now that there is an understanding of some of the dynamics. Coaching, the coaching, which sometimes is done by the therapist, and sometimes they're actually trained and certified ADD coaches out there who are there to help people look at their lives, look at their environments, their living environments, see where the clutter is internally and externally, see where the blockages have been, and teach them the tools, the practical tools of organization, the practical tools of follow-through, and helping people with ADD, once they start treatment, to start reinforcing a sense of follow-through, completion, success, self-satisfaction, building of confidence. All those things are so important. And for people who, you know, I have known a couple of people who just went for the medication, and they still struggled after that. They may have had easier times, but there was still a sense of struggle because they weren't dealing with a lot of the internal stuff. So what you just saw was my mind going from saying to you one of the criteria is difficulty getting organized and going off onto another tangent, which is, again, common for people with ADD. Third, I said chronic procrastination, trouble getting started. Number four, many projects going simultaneously, but trouble with follow-through. Again, we have great ideas. We may have a lot of different things going on. We may have made too many commitments and there's too much on our plate, and then we just freeze. So we're going to take a short break here, and I'm going to come back and finish this list and talk about where you might be able to find some help other than what I've mentioned. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster.
That I heard of once in a life.
Truth Faster, this is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're talking about attention deficit disorder in adults. And I was going through a general checklist. There are more detailed ones. Like I said, the general adult ADD symptom checklist by Daniel Amen, which you could find at www.oneaddplace.com. Another one that I've just actually received to fill out in conjunction to my observations for a friend that used to live here in LA that's now living in Georgia is the Copeland symptom checklist for adult attention deficit disorders. It's actually the first time I'm seeing it, so it looks similar to the other one. Driven to Distraction is the book I'm reading from now. The fifth criteria is tendency to say what comes to mind without necessarily considering the timing or appropriateness of the remark. It's like the child with ADD in the classroom. The adult with ADD gets carried away with enthusiasm. An idea comes and it must be spoken, even if it's a bit tactless at the moment for the situation. Number six, a frequent search for high stimulation. An adult with ADD is constantly on the lookout for something novel and engaging, something in the outside world that can catch up with the world when it's rushing inside. And you may find people with ADD who are real, like, risk takers, the bungee jumpers, the, you know, motorcyclists, the mountain climbers and things. There's a calmness that comes when the focus shows up. And one of the other criteria, which I was just about to mention here, is easy distractibility, trouble focusing attention, tendency to tune out or drift away in the middle of a page or a conversation, often coupled with the ability to hyperfocus at times. Now, that's an important thing, because the hyperfocus is when, at the last minute, all of a sudden, I can stay up all night and get the grant written or the project finished and stuff, and you can't distract me from it, because now I'm in this hyperfocus mode. So it's really less about attention deficit and more about attention inconsistency. We also tend to have an intolerance for boredom, but we just have to get engaged in something. And, you know, people say, well, I never feel bored, is because they're usually jumping into something very quickly the moment subconsciously they're beginning to feel the boredom. I said the one often creative, intuitive, and highly intelligent. Well, that comes from the fact that we weren't book learners necessarily. Most of our learning came from sensing. We learned to read people. And I think that one of the reasons why I'm such a good therapist, and I believe that I am, is because there was that development of sensing people and reading them and understanding them instead of learning everything I got from books. Trouble in going through established channel following proper procedure. It's that sense of independence. It's not some issue with authority figure. It's something that, some need for that stimulation, something novel, some way of doing things that's going to challenge us. Number 11, impatient and a low tolerance for frustration. And while I hide this well because I've always been seen as a very patient person, I'm able to stand on lines because my mind goes off in places or on people watching and stuff, and I can stay centered doing that. But we tend to be impatient people. Number 12, impulsive, either verbally or in action, as an impulsive spending of money, changing plans, enacting new schemes or career plans and the like. I've warned people out that have known me with all these new thoughts and ideas coming up. And I tend to be someone who stays put, stays in the same, apartment or house for a while. Tendency to worry needlessly, endlessly. Tendency to scan the horizon looking for something to worry about. 14, a sense of insecurity. We often feel as if the world could collapse around us. 15 would be mood swings, moodability, especially when you finish a project, you become disengaged in a relationship or a project, and it's kind of like this drop, this crash that may happen. And the mood swings may be more pronounced than just, a situational depression. A sense of restlessness. Now, the hyperactive kid is obvious, but the adult, it may look more like nervous energy, pacing, drumming of fingers, shifting position while sitting, leaving a room or a table frequently, or just feeling edgy while at rest. And a big one here is tendency toward addictive behavior. Now, this is about the self-medication issue. It may be alcohol or cocaine or pot, something to either quiet the mind and the energy and numb the frustration and the shame, or it may be that the first time, and I often ask the client this, have you ever done coke or a stimulant, and what do you remember the first time you did it? And very often they remember a different reaction than the people around them. They got quieter. They didn't start bouncing off walls. And that is usually the telltale way of diagnosing this, if the stimulant calms one down or focuses one instead of getting one hyper, then the brain's doing what it does with the stimulant then. But the tendency toward addictive behavior can also be overwork, eating, shopping, gambling, even sex. Chronic problems with self-esteem. That's fairly self-explanatory. Inaccurate self-observation. We tend not to gauge ourselves as accurately as other people might. And we usually see ourselves as less effective or powerful than other people do. And the 20th one is a family history of ADD or manic depressive illness or depression or substance abuse or other disorders of impulse control or mood. Since ADD is probably genetically transmitted and related to the other conditions mentioned, it is not uncommon but not necessary to find such a family history. And, of course, it has to go back to childhood. Now, like I said, all of these are issues that anyone can relate to, self-esteem issues, all this. But when it's put together, and most people with ADD, when they go through that list or go through the more extensive checklist that Dr. Amen did or the Copeland one, it starts this tingling inside, this knowingness, this like, yes, it's not just, yeah, I procrastinate sometimes. It's, oh, my God. I do that, and that's where I get stuck, and it's all the time, even when people don't realize I'm doing it, and sometimes when I'm not realizing that's what I'm doing. But all the pieces come together. So the cynics who say everybody has ADD because everybody can relate to these symptoms, I tell you that if you talk to any adult with ADD who's had it diagnosed or is in the process of doing it, whether they've been medicated or not, they will tell you that there is a different intensity to hearing these symptoms all put together. You know, that's why it's called a disorder. A disorder is a group of symptoms that come together that help explain behavior or a situation. This is, has to do with attention deficit. Now, I have a theory, which I put out there whenever I talk about this. And I talked about self-medicating, whether it's crystal or coke or pot or alcohol or sex or drug, you know, or gambling or whatever. There are a lot of people who are in 12-step programs, and those programs work miracles for them. Maybe it's, part of it is because it's a good program, but part of it is the structure of having a sponsor, i.e. a coach, that gives assignments, does follow-up, and all this other stuff. But I've been doing addictions counseling for nearly 30 years, and there's a certain percentage of people who keep trying and trying and trying to work the programs, to do the assignment, to go to meetings and, you know, all this other stuff, but they keep relapsing. My theory is that there's a certain number of people in that group of constant relapsers who may be undiagnosed ADD, because you're giving them an assignment to do a writing thing, and that frustrates them. They're going to procrastinate. It's not what they're used to doing. And that frustrates them, so of course they're going to want to get high to numb the fact that they're not able to follow through on this stuff and may not even realize it. That doesn't say there aren't other things that may be causing this. The bottom line here is, educate. Do your homework. Don't jump to conclusions with this, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm so glad, even at age 45, that this got identified for me, because my life has transformed in so many ways, and I'm still working and struggling with certain behavior changes and certain issues that are part of me because of the ADD. So, I know that's a lot of information that I got through in a short period of time. Any of you that have been out there listening, I thank you for doing so. If you want to reach me, email me, or call me, go to tellthetruthfaster.com. This show will be up and on there within a week or two, and all my past shows are archived. So if you have some comments and some feedback for me, I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. Same time next Tuesday.
This is Independent 1310.